Motherhood can be a beautiful thing, but the full journey there is often cut short. Excitement around the pregnancy at birth is celebrated through announcements, baby showers, and gender reveals. But what about the crucial period after the birth? Mothers undergo a monumental change physiologically, mentally, and physically, and need to find a balance in their new normal. The healing, wellness, and support that a mother needs at this vulnerable stage can have a long-lasting impact on her maternal health and relationships, and it's important we open this dialogue. This podcast shines a light on the stories of mothers as they come into a new version of themselves and is a platform to share their unique and special journey. Our intention is to welcome, celebrate, commiserate, and build a new kind of community. My name is Margaret, your host for I'm Anita Minute podcast, and I'm glad you're here. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to I'm Anita Minute. Today, we're doing something a little different and welcoming a subject matter expert to the show. Shelly Rahim is joining us from New Mother Caregiving. She wears many hats, including a postpartum caregiver, postpartum chef, birth doula, and birth story listener. She has been serving mothers during the childbearing years for over 15 years and has developed a postmodern methodology for nourishing and caring for mothers in the first 40 days after birth. Just from that, I think we're going to have a lot of insights for expecting moms and their support systems. Shelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I wanted to start off by understanding your inspiration for pursuing this profession.
Yeah, I had my children when I was young. So I was 19 when I had my first, and then I was 22 when I had my second baby, and I was 33 when I had my third. And each time I kind of felt this calling to become a midwife, or I just really felt strongly that I always wanted to work with mothers. But I didn't really understand how when I was young and in my 20s. And finally, after the birth of my third baby, I had been doing yoga. And I thought, this was back in 2006. And I was, you know, yoga is a great way to prepare for birth. And so I did a prenatal yoga teacher training. And so that was my entry into the birth world, was through prenatal yoga. Mm. And preparing moms' minds and bodies and soul for birth. Then I became a childbirth educator. I kind of just started adding on as I went along the way. And I became a birth doula. And then I started bringing food to the labors because moms were not well nourished. And then I became a postpartum, you know, caregiver and then an Ayurvedic chef. And yeah, so that kind of, that's it, it sort of organically grew as I just was hungry for, you know, the more trainings. And I just want to do more of this. So
yeah, that's awesome. And I think that's such a natural progression of like realizing it's not one thing you're doing in that moment. It's all the other things that are happening either before or after the birth that really help with recovery. So it's like extending your reach into the other process, parts of the process. And yeah. I didn't know that it was yoga as an entry, because that makes a lot of sense. The labor and delivery class I took was hosted by a yoga studio. So now it's all clicking in my head.
Yeah, it's really good. The thing about it, which I didn't realize at the time, but I look back now, I'm like, oh, I had a lot of wisdom I didn't know I had, because understanding the birth journey by being a birth doula, by going through it, by preparing them, the couples, and then experiencing what they experience, and then meeting them on the other side as a postpartum doula, like I get that full spectrum of breadth of knowledge of what they've gone through. So that's informed how important it is that I know they need to rest. They need to rest for 40 days because I witnessed that, you know, what they experience. And I know that their bodies need those 40 days of rest. It's an embodied kind of wisdom that I gave myself leading up to the postpartum time.
And it sounds like you had three children. Did you have the same postpartum experience, or did you tweak it with each birth and kind of refine your approach to how you wanted to heal from those births?
Yeah, I really lucked out because I was, like I said, 19. We were young college students. My, like at the time, boyfriend, we moved in with his mom. And because we were just going to school and we didn't have money, and she's Pakistani. They're from Pakistan. And so I basically got South Asian postpartum care. Mm. And I didn't realize there was any different back in 1992. But I didn't have to do anything for 40 days at least. Mm-hmm. I just fed my baby, rested, and that was it. And that was how it was for all of the births. My mom is American. And so she would get a week off work and she would come down and, you know, help. But she just honestly, like, her helping was like going shopping. you need slippers. Okay, let me run out and get some. So, you know, I got the kind of perspective of like, okay, this is sort of the American mm-hmm. modern mother who doesn't really feel comfortable or remember how to help her daughter through birth. And then my South Asian mother-in-law who, you know, fed me all the right kinds of foods and cleaned the house for me and took care of me and brought me milk with ghee and chais that helped my milk come in. And so, yeah.
I think that what you just said really describes some of the tension that some Asian American moms might be anticipating, because I think there's like an old school and new school way of thought. And in a lot of situations, they're parents are, or mothers are, imposing these regulations, quote unquote, on new moms. And as Americanized generation, we're not always sure what the backing is behind these reasonings and these things. So like my mom was fairly strict, which I was surprised because my mom's not usually strict about anything. But for this particular phase of my life, she was very strict with not leaving the house, literally not leaving the house. Like, I could not go for a walk around the block, not eating cold stuff. Like, I couldn't even have a seltzer. And it's, you know, I think what you just described with like your mother versus your mother-in-law, that's probably what a lot of those listeners are going through in terms of like preparing for postpartum.
Right, with blended households like that, which is becoming like more common, almost you know, the norm now in America. And we do see the like your mom coming and hanging on to those traditions very strongly, because that's what she got probably from her mom. Mm-hmm. So that's what she knows as her embodied experience of this is what postpartum is supposed to be. And it's very strict. Chinese, right?
Or yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I've worked with a lot of families. Most of my families are from India that I work with. Mm-hmm. And just because mm-hmm. my husband's Pakistani and they we kind of have that commonality. Mm-hmm. And so they have a very similar, like their moms or mother-in-laws come over from India to take mm-hmm. care of them. And there is that same similar kind of tension. Like I could hear when you were sharing your story, like I couldn't even walk around the block. Like, mm-hmm. wait a second, you know, we should be able to have kind of a blend of the two. Like, you know, can we find a way to bridge this really important wisdom that the maternal elders carry from other cultures? Mm-hmm. Bridge that with more of the modern Western mindset, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So the clientele that you have, do you find that it's usually mothers reaching out to you, or is it grandparents that are reaching out to you and asking you to step in to help them with this caregiving for their for the expecting mother?
Oh, it's always the mothers.
Okay.
That hire me as a postpartum caregiver or doula. Or gotcha. I also do the postpartum massage. I do massage and belly binding. And okay. So oftentimes when I have Indian clients, so the massage practice is very much an Ayurvedic. It's an Indian tradition. And they do it, I think, also in a lot of Asian cultures too. Mm-hmm. But traditionally, a postpartum mom will receive a full body massage every day for 40 days. And then also she'll have her belly bound with a cloth.
That sounds amazing. What kind of, like, what parts of your body, it, like, how do you, what's the difference between that massage and a normal body massage?
Yeah. So in, so when I speak of the word Ayurveda, I'll just kind of share what that is. That's the India's holistic health system. So, mm-hmm. And in one of their, like healing modalities is to use a lot of really warm, like our hot sesame oil, and to massage that into the mother's body. And I actually have this little mini crock pot that I keep my hot sesame oil, and I'll go through like 8 ounces of oil on her body. It's a lot of oil, and it's very, very grounding and soothing. But I massage I massage their whole body. I just have them lying on their back with like pillows under their knees. In those early days, I don't turn them onto their stomach, but I come to the home and I do like a full 1 hour massage, and then I bind their belly. They take a shower, they wipe, they draw, you know, they wash the oil off, and then because the moms will come over from India and they'll have other traditional foods and their customs, the things that they do for the mother, but they usually don't do the massage. That's somebody they usually hire to come to the home. Yeah, a lot of my Indian clients will hire me to come for to do the massage every day or 3 times a week.
What is the purpose of the massage?
That's a really good question. And I wish every mother, like that's part of new mother caregiving, my business is like every mother receives exquisite, high quality postpartum care after birth for the first 40 days. Like every mother, if every mother had a full body massage like this every day, like I think we'd have world peace, honestly. But so if you think about birth, giving birth, just it actually kind of shocks the system. It's just this massive event that happens in your body and your mind and your emotions and your brain. Everything is going through this complete transformation, all in like a matter of a very short amount of time. And so the nervous system is kind of like really upregulated, especially at the hospitals. There's people coming in the room. You don't really get to sleep. There's a lot of disturbances. And anyways, when a mom lays her body down with the intention of this person is going to just massage me gently, put oil on me, wrap me, and I actually swaddle my moms after I'm done, like with each body part. I'll like tuck them in with the blanket. I use a lot of warmth. I use a warm rice pack on their womb. So it's very grounding. And so after they're done with that 1 hour full body massage and they swaddle and they lay there and they're just, it's like a reset button has been pushed. And they then they get off the table and you can look into their eyes and I can see just this calmness, this like really grounded, because birth, you can see in their eyes like just this like frazzled, you know, from birth, and then the massage just really brings them back into their body.
Interesting. Is there a reason it's sesame oil?
There is, yeah. It is a, according to the traditions, sesame oil has that very grounding quality. So each food we eat, each you know, oil, all the different oils have, some of them are more stimulating and invigorating, but sesame has that quality of being very earthy and grounding.
Very cool. That's such a cool thing to do. I have heard of breast massage, but I haven't heard of like full body massages before. So sounds like they're bringing you in to help supplement some of the help that they want to give their expecting or their new mother. What do you find to be some of the biggest challenges for your clientele in the postpartum phase?
Yeah, I think some of the biggest challenges that I see is people want, like when I talk to you about this first 40 days and they want to have a restful recovery, they want to be cared for so that they can literally just rest and bond with their baby and let their body heal. But the problem in our culture is that nobody knows how to make that happen. The maternal elders, except for, you know, like maybe the Asian mothers, the Indian mothers who still have these traditions, they come and they know, I'm going to feed you certain foods. I'm going to cook. I'm going to cook for you. I'm going to clean for you. I'm going to take the baby so you can sleep. You know, they know to do that. But in American culture, because I think back in after World War II, when birth became industrialized, because before World War II, all the births happened in the home, and then the doctor would come to the home, and all the grandmas and the aunties would take care of the moms, you know, and Then when birth became industrialized and women started focusing on careers and working, then that was something kind of we gave up, was this value of who's going to take care of the mothers now. So now what we have is like four generations of postpartum mothers who really haven't had a lot of care, right? Because they only had a week off work. And we've also had the message of, well, women can do it all. We can, you know, we're strong. And so we're kind of coming out of that now. And there's some awareness that like, oh, this doesn't really work. You know, we've got a really high postpartum depression rate, postpartum suicide rate, you know, and so now there are people are realizing, oh, I do. I need someone to take care of me. I need someone to clean my house and like cook for me. But I can't just tell my mom to do that. Like, you know, and so it's really this disconnect between the two generations. And so what happens is mothers and mother-in-laws, they want to come help, but they don't want to impose, you know, on their, oh, I'm here as a guest in their home. You know, I don't want to like overstep my boundaries. I don't want to be pushy. You know, and so it's really hard for both people. It's hard for the mothers and mother-in-laws to really know how to help. And then it's hard for the new parents to ask for the help they need because they don't really quite yet understand what their needs are either.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially when I think about my mom stepping in to help. She stayed with me. In some instances, I know that the new moms stay with their moms, actually, like back in their childhood homes. But my mom came to our place. And so she's like in a new environment. She's like, I don't know where everything is in your kitchen. I don't know where like all this stuff is. I don't know where the cleaning supplies are. You know, like things like that, little things that, you know, she wanted to help. But, you know, she tried to be, you need a mom who's able to like just try to figure it out herself versus someone who keeps like trying to ask you, right? Because then that's another mental load to figure out how people can help you. That makes a lot of sense. What are some of the harmful behaviors that you might see with the new moms? Either like someone visiting who's trying to help, who's not really helping, or a mom like trying to do something and it's actually not good for her in this 40-day period?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that something I would really love to see change in our culture is OBGYNs and midwives alike, even home birth midwives who tend to be a little bit more on the natural side or more traditional with care. They all tend to be kind of more medically minded about women getting like blood clots after birth if they rest too much. Like, oh, you shouldn't just lay in bed all day and all night. Like, you could get bed sores and blood clots. So the advice that is given by the medical team and by even midwives is not, you're on bed rest, you're injured. Like, birth injures you. You are on bed. Tell the family she's on bed rest. That's not what they say. What they say is, you should keep your blood flowing and forever, like things like this, like every doctor is different, but I've even heard a home birth midwife say for every 20 minutes of, sitting or like resting per hour, you should be up moving around for 40 minutes. And this means she's going to be up doing chores. She's going to be up doing things. And this is very detrimental because her body desperately needs rest to heal. And she's not like laying there on her, you know, she's not laying there on her side, not moving her body. She's not going to get bed sores. Like, she's up feeding the baby every 2 hours. She's, you know, going to the bathroom. And so I think that's one thing that I would like to see change, because birth injuries can continue on and on for the rest of your life if you just don't get enough rest during that time. Yeah, that's one thing.
Yeah, that's big. I mean, I didn't even think of that. And for me, I also default to like busybodying if I'm home. So that makes a lot of sense in terms of like not getting up.
It could be why your mom was really strict about you can't go for a walk around the block. There's, you know, I mean, there's also like, you know, if you're 3 or 4 weeks out and you want to just do a little bit of movement, you know, you should be allowed to do a little bit of movement. But the thing is that where she comes from when she explains that and she had that protocol for you is that because your pelvis, your uterus, it takes 6 weeks to go back down to its mm-hmm. pre-pregnancy size. And then your pelvis mm-hmm. is, those ligaments are still really like stretched out and the bones haven't mm-hmm. actually come all the way back. So you might feel good. Like at about 3 weeks, I tell my moms, okay, at about 3 weeks, especially if you've had good quality care and you've been able to rest, you're going to feel deceptively strong. And you're going to want to go for that 1 mile walk. Like I can walk for a mile. I can go out. And do that. But what happens is when they come back, they're kind of like, ooh, like they go to bend down and like, ooh, their pelvis just is sore. It's not a good sore. It's like you pushed it because you feel fine and pretty normal, but you're not.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's big. Do you have any tips on what people should do during that hibernation period? Because I personally was super bored out of my mind. Like I felt like I wasn't stimulated. I would say I was exhausted, but not from any kind of mental stimulation. And I also like have heard some situations where screen time is limited or like, you know, they don't want you watching these shows and stuff. So I just felt like there wasn't much for me to do.
Yeah, I think your situation is unique with having your Chinese mom kind of take charge and other ones that are more strict with like not allowing screens and things. And there is a lot of wisdom in that. However, we need to also meet our daughters where they're at. They're in a different mm-hmm. country. It's a different generation. It's a different world. And there might even be some traditions that are intact still today that were because back when they were designed to take care of postpartum mothers, there wasn't actual like electricity, you know, so mm-hmm. you couldn't wash your daughter's hair yep. with like hot water. So she could really actually get sick, you know, I mean like,
yeah. And
so I think it's important if we can have that communication with our maternal elders prenatally and say, look, mm-hmm. I really want your support and your help and your wisdom. However, please tell me ahead of time, what are the things that, you know, are really important and why? Let's talk about mm-hmm. that. And let's also know that for my mental health, you know, I really do need some socializing time. And mm-hmm. I do want my girlfriend to come over because I need to share with her my birth story. That's yeah. important. You know, you maybe the type yeah. of socializing that you craved was another mom to come over and just, mm-hmm. oh, let me hear your birth story. Wow. These challenges, I'm feeling them too. Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely. That's a good, I mean, that's a really great point about like visitors. If you know someone who's in that 40 day postpartum phase, it's really important to visit or just if they want you there, visit or reach out because it does get very lonely just from firsthand experience.
For your situation, I think you might have needed that. But for most people, like Americans who have visitors, they end up entertaining them. And then it just takes more energy and it's not helpful. So it kind of just depends on your situation.
Yeah, I think that that's such a important nugget for those who aren't expecting but who have close friends who are expecting because it really shifts how you spend time together in that time frame, right? Like they're not going to have lunch ready for you or anything like that. If anything, you should be bringing lunch to them. And I mean, I felt weird at first doing it, but during that time, if I had family over, I started just to like excuse myself to like go take a nap. Yes. Like somebody else take this baby. I'm just going to go nap because I can't even hold the conversation right now. Yes. So it's almost like giving new moms a permission to do that in their own home. You said that your clientele seek you out, which is great. Do you find that it's coming from them wanting to approach this tradition or something they read about or some rumblings in the industry. Like, where is this stemming from that you're starting to get these clients to reach out to you?
Yeah, I think that a lot of my clients, there's two books on the market that kind of expose the dysfunctional state of postpartum in America in a very gentle way. It's the First 40 Days by Heng Oh, I think, O-H. Mm-hmm. She's a Chinese-American. And then The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Johnson. Those two books really talk about, hey, look at this, you know, in other countries, women get 40 days of care and massage mm-hmm. and all these things and mm-hmm. nourishment. And so what these two books have done is they've really, you know, kind of rattled the bones, like some a knowing mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. in these women's bones. But then those books don't actually tell you how to attain that. okay. And so, yeah, so they come to me and I actually offer those services. And now what I'm doing is I'm creating an online course so that families can do this for their own daughters and daughters-in-laws. And yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, education is like such a big component of it. What does a typical day look like for you?
Yeah. So when I am taking care of a mom in the first 40-day window, that first week, it's like all hands on deck because she's coming back from the hospital. She's mm-hmm. the most vulnerable. Like a lot of times they can't actually even sit right on there mm-hmm. because they're just so tender and raw and they're working. Me. Yeah. And then they're working so hard, like full time on just making sure that latch, you know, get the latch, milk's coming in. It's just such a high demand time. So in those first few days, I am like there at their house for 10 hours. And that's just wow. what it takes because I'm helping her with her sitz bath. I'm cooking her breakfast. Yeah. I'm serving her in bed. I'm helping her with breastfeeding. Then I'm making her lunch and I serve that to her in bed. And mm-hmm. I make sure her bedside table has all her snacks and teas. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I might make her bed for her while she's in the shower. And then I make sure she has dinner. Her and her family have dinner for the evening all set before I leave. But mm-hmm. when I work in the kitchen in someone else's home that first week, I'm a lot slower. So that's why it's kind of a long day. But then as I kind of get familiar in the kitchen, as she gets a little bit stronger, then it goes down to like 8 hours a day. And even sometimes towards the end, like 6 hours a day. But
okay.
And then I'll throw that massage in there too, right? So I'm also like setting up the massage table and like when the baby has a good nap, let's get her on the table and massage her and bite her belly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds amazing. How long do you typically work with the client? Is it for the full 40 or do you find that they usually have you helping in the first 2-3 weeks and then it kind of sunsets or like what's the pattern?
Yeah, I do the full 6 weeks, but that's less common for people's budgets. Usually they'll hire me for like 1 week or sometimes like 3 weeks or 2 weeks. But I also mm-hmm. do food delivery service. So sometimes they'll hire me just for the meals or just mm-hmm. for the massages. Mm-hmm. So I kind of customize it for people's budget and their needs. And I even work with families like the grandparents, if they're there. Mm-hmm. We'll all kind of work together as a team. So it kind of just depends on each person's needs.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you're also a birth doula. So I feel like we didn't even touch on that. Do your clients for the birth experience end up working with you for postpartum or do you feel like it's two different groups?
No, that's actually my favorite. When I get like people working with me from like they take my birth classes. I used to teach the prenatal yoga. So I'd be with them every mm-hmm. week in yoga class and then the birth classes with their partner. And then I'm the doula. And then I go home after the birth, I sleep, and then I come back and I start the next day, you know, and we just carry having that continuity. It's so beautiful to be able to witness the transformation and to be part of that nurturing them through the whole process. It's kind of rare when I get somebody that I do that with, but those are the best. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that's like a very intimate relationship actually, right? You're essentially like an extension of the family at that point. You've been there 100%. For like the most important parts of this family's life, which is amazing.
Yeah, and I do. I love them. Like I just step in and I just love them like my own daughter, you know? And
yeah,
it's pretty special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So backing up a little bit about the birth doula component and the prenatal yoga you provided, what are some key things that expecting mothers can do right now for labor and delivery and for postpartum?
Yeah, two different questions. I would say just really briefly for getting ready for labor and delivery, I do think yoga is a great way to prepare your body. Mm-hmm. Doing all those squats and just quieting the mind is probably the best way you can prepare, especially if you can find a class, because then you have other moms and, you know, it's really good. And then letting go of attachment to birth plans. It's a balancing act, because you need to kind of be aware of the interventions that are going to be on the menu when you arrive at the hospital. However, you don't really know what you're going to need until you're in the moment. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in that moment, what you truly need is what you were hoping to avoid the most. And so just learning to create awareness, but also let go of attachment. And that's what I recommend for birth. And then for postpartum, I feel like really think about that first week after birth as you are completely disabled person. You will be in bed and you'll be just sore and healing and trying to figure out the latch, and you won't be able to do anything else besides just that. That's it. You're lucky to get a shower. So make sure that you have two things. Make sure that you have people in place that can bring you the proper food, every day, cook for you, every single day. And make sure the food is nutritious for you, so your breast milk can be nutritious. Mm-hmm. Make sure someone's cleaning your house for you and keeping it clean, because your brain is going through a complete reorganization process, and it's kind of chaos in your brain during that time. Mm-hmm. And so you need order in your environment. You need cleanliness and order in your environment in order to kind of feel peace. And then the other thing that's really important, which if you follow me on Instagram, I'm going to do a whole series on this, but it's that your bedside table, you're going to sit in your bed and a lot feeding the baby, sitting up and feeding the baby, or you might have a nursing chair. And I call this the healing and connecting area. There's usually one, and it's in the bed. So imagine you have one hand and you're going to be reaching over on that table, that bedside table, 5 to 30 times per hour. You're going to reach over and grab your water. You're going to reach over and grab some tea. You're going to reach over and grab a snack. You're going to grab your nipple cream. You're going to grab a burp rag. So that table, if it's well equipped to nourish you, the mother, and to make sure you're hydrated and you're fed and you have everything, that will be key to allowing you to get rest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's such a strong photographic memory for me, actually, what you just talked about, the bed table. I didn't even think about that until you were describing it. And I remember that section was just packed. I don't even have a formal bedside. I was using my vanity or a little stool I had, because I don't have a nightstand. And there was just so much stuff on that, and it just kept toppling over. And I just remember if I wanted to breastfeed and I was relocating to the nursing chair, I had to bring 600 things with me, and I would always forget one thing. And then I'd be screaming across the house, can somebody get the, whatever it is. So it's so funny you say that, cause I totally forgot about that memory. And it's etched into my head now.
Wow.
All those little things I had, all those knickknacks I had. That's some really good tips.
Yeah. So I have clients who have a nursing table and they have a little caddy that has, and people have caddies, but they put all the baby things in the caddies. But you need a caddy, or you need the bedside table and the caddy for all the things for you, for your water and your, you know, your tea and your snacks. And so it's organized. Yeah. So that's, it's good to plan ahead for that and build that into your infrastructure for rest. And that's what I prepare my clients for those things.
Yeah. I also thought caddies were so extra, but then I was like, I could have really used a caddy during that time in hindsight. So if you're listening and you're expecting, get a caddy. Is there a specific message you would like to share with moms who are currently in the postpartum phase?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, your birth experience and those first 40 days postpartum, like those, that your story matters. And the fact that you're listening to this podcast means that you know your story of becoming a mother is significant. And it has an impact on the legacy that you're creating in your maternal lineage. So when you think, you know, when you think about your birth, or you think about the challenging postpartum times, and you think about being broken, and you know, how did you rebuild yourself? And when you think about moments of your birth, when maybe you felt weak, how did you find strength to keep going? So it's, there's a saying that my teacher says, like, you have the wound, but you also have the medicine. And it may take a lifetime to fully extract that medicine, but as you do, you will heal, and you will heal yourself, but you also heal for generations before you.
Wow, that's a really beautiful message. If you listen to my episode, that's actually a similar theme of what I said about women becoming a bolder, stronger version of themselves when they become a mother, and not realizing that they have this strength in them. But one day you just realize you're doing it, and you're healing, and you're living this new version of yourself. And I feel like it's so transformative. So I love the way you said it. I'm just synthesizing and giving my cut, but I love the way you said that message.
I'm getting chills. I'm just all over my body hearing your version of it. And it's beautiful.
Thank you so much for sharing all your insights today, all this knowledge. I feel like I learned a lot, even though I've been through the process twice. It's great to hear firsthand from someone with your experience and in this field. And I'm sure there are a lot of takeaways for our moms and the partners who are listening. So for more information about Shelly's practice, please check out www.newmothercaregiving.com, where she has additional resources such as online courses and cookbooks. And if you want to know more about our company, Amma & Co., please visit www.ammaandco.com. See you guys next week.